Dan, last time we were together, it was talking about Chili.
That's right.
And one of the most enjoyable books I've ever read, and I've reread it a couple of times, The Authentic History of Cincinnati Chili was
yes.
that book, correct?
Yeah.
Had a great time with you and the Karadzhev boys. This new one now is about Cincinnati Gutta.
That's right.
Or Gutta. Give me a thumbnail sketch of the history of this food that's so very popular around here.
Yeah, it's interesting how popular Gutta or Gutta has become. By the way, you can tell how long Gutta has been in a family by how they pronounce it. If they pronounce it Gutta, it's been in the family for at least three generations. In fact, if you go down to Findlay Market and go to Grandma Debbie's, if you pronounce it Gutta, she'll come from behind the counter and hug you. So Gutta is love, first of all. But in terms of the history of Gutta, there's a couple of myths that I wanted to dispel about Gutta in writing this book. And two of them are that Gutta was invented in Cincinnati and that there's nothing like it in Germany. So although it did evolve certainly in Cincinnati, it wasn't invented here. It's part of a food family in Germany called Grützwurst or grain sausages. And these were kind of the last thing made at the slaughter of a pig or a cattle. And so basically all the parts that were left over were put in a pot with some sort of grain. In our case with Gutta, it was pinhead oats. It could have been rye, buckwheat, like scrapple, it became cornmeal. And so it was a way to extend those last parts of the pig or the cattle to create something that was made for the working class to eat. And so there's this legacy in a very particular area of Northwest Germany, which I call the Gutta parallelogram, because it's bounded by four cities and makes a parallelogram. Mm-hmm. That's where about 60% of the Germanic immigrants that came to Greater Cincinnati came from. And in fact, you can trace some of the oldest recipes for Gutta to that very specific area. And one of those that we can trace very specifically is Finke's Gutta over in Fort Wright. And they come from a village within that area called Neuenkirchen. And they came to Cincinnati, the West End, and then migrated to Covington, Kentucky in the early 1870s. And they've been making Gutta ever since. So they're the oldest continually operating producer of Gutta that we have in Greater Cincinnati.
They began in the West End here?
When they landed in Cincinnati, they started in the West End, which was where a lot of the Germanic immigrants went before Over the Rhine was very much a German settlement. And then they found that it was a little less crowded over in Covington, and that's where they settled and kind of set up shop.
Okay, you've mentioned the West End. You've mentioned Covington. There are just a ton of different, like, chili in this town.
Yeah.
Different areas of town and of our region that chili is known for and that Gutta is known for.
Yeah.
What are some of the other ones? Is it big on the west side?
It's big on the west side, but what I found is that it's not an east side or a west side thing. You know, there are restaurants on the east side, like the Echo in Hyde Park Square, that serve up Gutta by the hundreds of pounds every year. There are probably more of a preponderance of kind of those neighborhood butcher shops that are still in existence on the west side. So many assume that it's a west side thing. It's also a Northern Kentucky thing. In fact, many of the earliest producers can be traced to the Covington area of Northern Kentucky.
You, a little while ago, mentioned pinhead oats, which in reading your book and seeing that term many, many times throughout, reminded me of a dear friend of mine who's no longer with us, who absolutely, he made his own Gutta. He absolutely loved it. And we'd get together and go on what we called lost weekends for several times a year over the last 30 years or so. He moved away, to Florida. He lived in both North Carolina and Florida. It was one of those two places. And whenever he would come to town, he would go wherever to buy pinhead oats to bring back because he said he couldn't get them down there to make his Gutta up. So that made me smile throughout your book. What are they?
So pinhead oats are basically oats that are not processed. The typical breakfast oat that we eat in our oatmeal cereal has been rolled, so it's been processed. So the outer husk and hull has basically been removed. Pinhead oats is really as close to the kernel that you get upon harvesting as possible. So there's a lot of good fiber. You know, it's a lot healthier than the typical processed rolled oats that we have.
Okay, there's one ingredient. What are the other ingredients that must be included to really be considered Gutta?
Right. So an original Gutta recipe has about a 1-to-1 ratio of pork to beef. It, of course, has pinhead oats. It has a bay leaf, and it has salt and pepper. Now, there are two schools of thought. So there's either those that put herbs in it and those that put sort of warm spices. So when I say herbs, like sage, rosemary, and then when I say warm herbs, like nutmeg or allspice. My family happens to be on the allspice side of that equation. So that's how I know my geta. But of course, over the past many decades, people have added all sorts of peppers. The palate has gotten more accepting of spicier geta. The original Germans would probably roll in their graves and see what we've been putting in our geta recently. There's meatless gettas with turkey.
Venison.
Venison geta. Yes, absolutely. I just was talking to someone last weekend who makes a venison geta. And we've got our Jumpin' Joe Grotta, which is a vegan product that's been around since 1965.
Visiting with Dan Woollett, Dan has a new book called Cincinnati Geta, A Delectable History. I'm going to save the trip to Elmer Hensley for a little bit later. That was maybe my favorite part of the book. You make geta.
Yes.
What is yours modeled on? Grandma or a mixture of different folks?
Yeah, it's my grandmother's recipe, which is actually her mother's recipe. So it goes back to my great-grandmother, a woman by the name of Catherine Mokorowski from a very Germanic family. Back then, they used pork necks. So can you imagine how labor-intensive that was, picking the meat off of a bunch of pork vertebrae? It's not an easy process. It's about a four-hour process, even with a crock pot. I've heard that people have made it with the air fryer and some of the newer technology out there. But, you know, mine's a pork beef, sage, bay leaves, salt and pepper, and allspice.
So recipes for geta are not... There's a lot of parallels between geta and Cincinnati chili as far as a lot of the aspects of it, but it doesn't seem like geta is as secretive with the recipes as the chili folks are.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, because geta was originally something that was made in the house and it hasn't really become a commercial product until the last 40 years, I would say, it was shared amongst people, you know, they shared it amongst each other and there was no secrets to that special spice recipe like there is with Cincinnati chili. That being said, there are still some people that guard their geta recipes very much to the hip.
With their life.
Yeah.
And something else that surprised me was that for a long, long time, it was more or less a seasonal food. And it's kind of not so much anymore.
Right. Yeah. Before refrigeration, it was something that was made around the slaughter time, which typically happened end of September or November in the colder winter months. And before refrigeration, it was something that you would put in a crock and put a layer of fat on the top as kind of a preservative and put it in your root cellar or down in the basement where it was colder. And then as refrigeration came, you know, it became more of a year-round thing. You know, Geta Fest happens now in the hottest part of the summer. So it's certainly not a winter food by any means anymore.
Okay, now let's go to Queen City Sausage, Elmer Hensley's place. He invited you down for a tour and perhaps some samples. You were a kid in a candy store.
I was.
Tell us about that.
It was great. I had already been to Glear's factory and toured that with Dan Glear, the owner. And so I wanted to tour Cincinnati's largest producer of commercial producer of geta.
And largest, like poundage, astounding.
Yeah.
Do you remember what it is?
The top 10 producers in Cincinnati produce about 2.5 million pounds of geta a year. Most of that still is during the holidays when a lot of families have, you know, holiday brunches and things like that.
Get-togethers, yeah.
Get-togethers, people coming in from out of town. And so while Queen City Sausage is not the largest in comparison to Glear's, they're still second.
They're up there.
Of all those producers. Now, so that 2.5 million pounds is only the top 10 producers. There's about a meat market in every neighborhood that produces their own geta, as well as all the home producers of geta. So that tonnage, if you will, of geta that's made within the 275 loop is pretty significant for one singular weird regional product.
It's a real eye-opener. So back to Queen City Sausage and the Sausage King, Elmer Hensley.
Yeah, so he's just an amazing dude. He's, you know, an octogenarian. He's run the company since 1965. He borrowed a couple of $1,000s to open this meatpacking company. He had been working in the meatpacking industry because he grew up in Camp Washington. And so he had been working within some of the larger meatpackers since he was like 13. He kind of left school and became a meatpacker. So he's been running it since 1965. It's probably one of the cleanest food product companies I've ever been in, having been in the food industry. he has a frame as soon as you walk up into their offices of a list of all the meatpacking companies in Cincinnati that were around in 1965 when he started, and none of them are around today. He's the last man standing in Cincinnati. So he's got a lot of pride in his business, at where he's come, where he's taken it. They've certainly taken Geta in a new direction. Their marketing director, Mark Balassa, has a great media presence on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and they're doing a great job of just promoting that business. But what's also interesting, so Elmer is an octogenarian. He hired his younger brother, who's also an octogenarian, and he runs the Geta Spice Room. So this guy is schlepping 55-gallon drums of spices on a daily basis, mixing them for their Geta product. And he's just
that old German work ethic.
I tell you. Yeah, it's just amazing to talk to him, and he's still passionate about it. And it's just an incredible place to be. You just feel the passion that they have for their business and the history that's there that, you know, he's forgotten more about Cincinnati's meatpacking industry than most of us will ever know. And they just took Geta on a road tour and had a Geta Fest down in Florida. There was a barbecue business that's owned locally, but of course there are a lot of Cincinnati snowbirds that hang out in Florida in the wintertime. And so he had the first non-Cincinnati Geta Fest in Florida this past winter.
So we talked a lot about Cincinnati and our area, Northern Kentucky. Briefly, where else in the country are some Geta hotspots?
It may not be called Geta, but Geta has a lot of cousins throughout the U.S. So it comes from a German word called Grützwurst, which means grain sausage in English. And there are other pockets of Germanic towns throughout the country, especially in the Midwest, that have Grützwurst or some sort of Grützwurst. In fact, Ronald Reagan talked about growing up on Grützwurst where he grew up. Forget the town, but it was somewhere in Illinois. Yeah. So as the Germanic immigrants came and settled other areas, they brought these grain sausages with them. In Ohio, we have two pockets of Germanic settlements that roughly follow what was once the Miami-Erie Canal. In the area of Auglaize County near Minster, Ohio, there was a bunch of immigrants from that Geta parallelogram. And they actually came through Cincinnati, bought a land contract in Minster, Ohio, which was kind of in the middle of nowhere at that time. It was, you know, swampland, and a group of them moved up, and they have a product that's called grits that's just like Geta. It's made with pinhead oats, pork and beef, but it doesn't have onion in it. And then north of there, kind of on the way to Toledo, there's an area in—
And no onions because of the swampy land that couldn't grow them, correct?
Exactly. They came from a very swampy land, and they couldn't grow onions, so of course they wouldn't put onions in. And I went to the IGA, which is the only place in Minster, Ohio, that you can get grits. And I asked the woman who makes, I said, well, what's in it? And she told me, and I said, what about the onions? She said, you'd never get anyone in Minster to put onions in their grits, which I thought was funny. So north of there, near Napoleon, Ohio, on the way to Toledo, that's Henry County. There's another group of Germans that came from roughly the same area, but the ones in Minster were all Catholic. The ones in Napoleon were all Lutheran, and they came from another area kind of in the center of that area. And they have something called pretzels. It's more similar to grits. It's just like Geta in that it, you know, it has the pinhead oats, the pork and beef, but it, again, doesn't have onions because they were also from an area that was very swampy that couldn't grow onions. So it's just very interesting to me that we have two Geta cousins kind of in the same area that, you know, have similar but different recipes.
Very, very nice. It's a good read. Thanks for visiting with us. Dan Woolard's book is called Cincinnati Geta, A Delectable History. I'm assuming you perhaps will be out and about signing books somewhere in the not-too-distant future?
Yeah, I've got a couple of book signings coming up with a variety of historical societies. I'm going to be at Books by the Banks coming up in October. And I also created a Facebook group called Cincinnati's Oldest Geta Recipe. And so if anybody is interested in Geta happenings around town, ask to become a member, and you and 1,500 other greater Cincinnatians and satellite Cincinnatians can stay tuned.
You just pressed the hot button there. You're going to be overwhelmed, I think. Cincinnati Geta, A Delectable History, Dan Woolard, the author. Always a pleasure. It's a great read. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
And for Around Cincinnati, I'm Brian O'Donnell.